Well, God's relationship with Israel was reflected in the terribly difficult relationship between Hosea and the prostitute Gomer, whom he married. Now, Hosea finds Gomer very attractive, and he's so broken that she will not accept his love. And she says, yes, we're married, but she's going off with all these other men, just like Israel did. So whatever you read in Hosea about God's relationship with Israel is a reflection, or is reflected in, I should say, the experience of Hosea with Gomer. So Hosea 9 verse 10, I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first ripe in the fig tree at its first season. Well, Ezekiel 16, Jeremiah 2, God fell in love with Israel in the wilderness. He saw them as attractive, even though they were spiritually very weak. Ezekiel 20 says that they took the idols of Egypt with them through the Red Sea. Acts 7, quoting Amos, says that they carried the star of their god Remphan with them, as well as, I guess, the standards of the tribes. And they carried the tabernacle of Moloch with them, as well as the tabernacle of Yahweh. So they were weak from the start, and yet God fell in love with them. This is all reflected in how God tells Hosea to go and marry a prostitute. She was a prostitute from the start. And yet he sees them, he saw Israel as so attractive. This is the point of verse 10. I saw your fathers as the first ripe fig. I saw them like grapes. So this is, I suppose, what Paul would call imputed righteousness. And I think to count someone as if they are wonderful is part of love. That is part of loving somebody, that you see them positively. It's not that love is blind. That is, I think, too simplistic. It is not a case of turning a blind eye. Of course, God did not turn a blind eye. He knows all things. But love, despite that, sees the beloved as positive, as wonderful. And this is all a picture of how God sees us. We struggle really to believe what the New Testament says, that God and the Lord Jesus really see us so positively, unblameable, without spot, in his sight. Now, that's the point, in his sight. In his eyes, in his opinion, and his opinion is the only thing that matters. Like here in verse 10 of Hosea 9, I saw, that is, in my eyes, your fathers as the first ripe fig. I found Israel like grapes. Well, grapes and figs, in this sort of wonderful sense that they're described here, don't grow in the desert, but that is how God saw them. And you need to factor in the words of Balaam when he's given the visions of how God saw Israel. Numbers 23, Numbers 24 says, God did not see iniquity in Israel. He did not behold iniquity in Israel, didn't see the perverseness in Jacob. He saw them as if they were beautiful aloes, beautiful trees, as if their tents were beautiful to him. As he looked down upon them, saw their encampment, how beautiful are your tents, O Israel. This was again his imputed righteousness. And yet, despite that, what did they do at Balaam's time? Despite God seeing them so positively, they go off with the Midianites and worship Baal. And so Hosea continues, but they came to Baal Peor and consecrated themselves to that shameful thing. And this was the tragedy, that Hosea loved Gomer, thought she was wonderful, beautiful, saw all the good in her, and yet she went off to totally shameful, worthless men. And that is what we do every time we sin, when we go off unto the things of the flesh, the things of secular life, the idols of this world. And so why were they so attracted to Baal? This is quite a theme, isn't it, that Baal was their god of choice and the range of gods associated with Baal. I don't think it was simply because they were attracted to the idea of illicit sex. I think that would be too simplistic. Why would they want to worship Baal? Well, Baal was a fertility cult, as were in fact a lot of these idols. The idea was, if you worship this fertility cult, you will get blessing. And it was the idea of the fertility cult which was behind the way that the worshippers had sex with the priests, the priestesses, and so on. And so they wanted something more. When God had given them everything, he'd promised them abundant harvests, he'd promised them everything, but they wanted more than that. They liked this idea of, as it were, winning the lottery and getting fantastically wealthy, etc. And yet it seems that Hosea was not a poor man. He would have given everything for Gomer. He provided her, he says, with gold, with silver, with her clothing, with her food. But she went off to Baal, as it were. She went off to other men because of what she thought they could possibly give her in return for her prostitution. And you see that in so many lives. God has promised us basic food and clothing. He has promised us blessing, and yet people want more. Now, I'm not going to go to church. I'm not going to find time to read the Bible because I must get ahead in my career so that I will get wealth, so that I will get stability. All those things that we seek after, and you know, it is part of the life that is responsibly lived, that we do seek to provide for ourselves and our families. That is, as I say, responsible living. I'm not talking about responsible living. I'm talking about the seeking of great things. I'm talking about seeking for the nice properties, the nice expensive cars, holidays, and so forth. This is all really seeking to get these things because we think that we might get them if I do this or that, even if it involves sacrificing my relationship with God. And this was the attraction of the Baal cult, that it was supposedly a fertility cult. It was a kind of prosperity gospel that you go this way and with our religion and you will get blessed. Oh yeah, we want that blessing. And so it goes on, Hosea goes on, and they became abominable like that thing which they so loved. And that thing which they so loved was Baal. We become like what we worship. And the Psalms make this point a couple of times, that those who worship idols become like unto them. Now, there's a desire to worship coded, I think, within our natures, to seek for something greater than ourselves, to respect something that is beyond me. And we have to make a conscious choice, therefore, as to what we will worship. Whether it is this image of me wealthy, me with my nice house, me with big bank balances, me with this, that, and the other, or whether it is God. Because we become like what and whom we worship. We become like who we love, really. Now, if we are transfixed, really, by God's grace, particularly as in our days we see it in Jesus, we will become like him in thought, in action. This is the way for us. We become like that which we worship. Whereas if, in the end, if our deepest coded desire in our heart is that I want the great things of this life, well, you shall become like those things, and those things have all got feet of clay, and those things shall all pass in this world. Whereas we are called to another life, to be different, to worship not basically the image of ourselves, but that which is ultimately beyond us, which is the Father and his Son.